Welcome to Telling Tales.
Before the ayahuasca, before the clear blue skies, and before the...
All right, welcome back to another edition of Telling Tales. I don't know how seamless that that transition from the song to me speaking was, but I'm still experimenting with all of this. And, you know, I've been getting kind of... I got stuck when I got sober in the podcast, right? Like, where to go with all this? And it got into the ayahuasca medicine and what the impact that working with that medicine had on me and how it kind of led me to coaching. And then I got kind of bored with the story. And a lot of my creative energy lately has been directed towards writing. I've been working on this memoir, and you know, it's just kind of like an addiction memoir, but it's not your typical addiction memoir. Like, I really get into the root causes of addiction, and it really starts off, the book starts off with a scene on my third birthday where I threw this just epic tantrum, like just this tantrum of magnificent proportions, just this gnarly, gnarly tantrum. And it just, it points to this like really deep sorrow that I almost inherited at birth. Like, there was just this deep sadness that it's like I was born with. And, you know, the more and more recovery work I do, it's really easy to see that it came from my grandmother or my grandfather, well, my grandmother too, but my grandfather, my mother's father, was just this disgustingly awful, raging, alcoholic piece of shit, like violent, evil man, you know? And, you know, I'm just one generation separated from him, and I obviously inherited plenty of it. You know, we say in Kundalini yoga, you basically inherit the genealogy of seven generations, right? And so that's 256 people. So you have 256 people's stuff in you, and it predestines you to certain ways of being. You inherit it. You know, there's a genetic component to it. And so, you know, I inherited this alcoholism, but I don't even see it as like an alcoholism. I see it as... I inherited just this way he did life, right? And the amazing thing about Kundalini yoga is that, all yoga for that matter, is what you're doing is you're putting yourself intentionally in these postures and in these positions and in these, in a lot of ways, predicaments that undo the genealogical patterns that you inherit, because you're walking around with 256 people's stuff in you, seven generations of stuff, right? And I believe that's just if you count only like grandparents and grandparents and great grandparents and that, not all the other relatives who are in the mix. I could be wrong about this. You're welcome to do your own research. But what yoga does is it intentionally undoes that. And you could even make the argument that like surfing has an element of yoga to it, or union. Yoga means union, right? And so when I take up surfing, I'm undoing a pattern, or I'm carrying on a pattern, because there are surfers in my family. My sister's godfather, who is my second cousin, was the first person who introduced me to surfing on the Jersey Shore when I was 9 years old. And I tell you what, I got on that boogie board when I was nine. I might have been 10. And I felt what the ocean was. I felt at one with it. I got a couple of rides just on some like foamy waves on this boogie board, and it moved me. And that's what led to my skateboarding. So there's like the good part that I inherited, that adventurous spirit, that union with all things, which is what surfing really is in a lot of ways, juxtaposed with this dysfunction. Right. And I come to find out after I spoke to my second cousin about, I don't know, 3 months ago, he wanted some coaching from me. It turns out that like there's all this crazy dysfunction on my father's side of the family too. Bipolar disorder and mental illness and just rampant alcoholism, and there's just all of this, just, you know, there's just a disturbing level of craziness, basically. And my grandmother, my father's mother, was fucking nuts. And come to find out that my grandmother, my grand, my mom's mom, you know, was married to my grandfather, who was awful, and then was involved with at least one, if not two, very dysfunctional relationships after that. you know, at the time, I remember my grandmother being like, you know, 50, 51, you know, which is like, I find 51-year-old women attractive now. She was just like this woman with a fucked up relationship to men, you know, like she was just like a person. And she was my grandmother, though. She was old to me, but she was really just like, you know, some woman that was like involved with, you know, bad men. And I know women that age now who are involved with bad men or are doing recovery work to stop being involved with bad men. So it's just really interesting because my mother's only remedy for the dysfunction that she grew up in, the terror that she experienced as a very small child, was control. And what did I do? I rebelled against control. You try to control me and we're going to have a fucking problem. Because I'm a naturally wild spirit. I'm a naturally free spirit, right? Natural wild child. And, you know, good kid. I was never like, I never had really meanness in me. I did a little bit in like junior high. But really at the end of the day, I was always a very gentle soul. And, but just with this raging temper. And the book starts out with me on my third birthday just throwing this fit. And there's this recurring theme of anger. There's this recurring theme of like, you know, you just never know when this anger is going to pop out and do the thing that it does. And there are a couple of scenes, you know, with my friends where like, you know, where like the anger came out and then my friends saw the anger. And there are only a couple of friends, you know, who really saw this side of me. And it's fucking psychotic. I mean, it was a good thing that I was a small child who was not very strong because I could have killed people with how angry I was. And anger was the first drug that I was addicted to. Anger and when the brain experiences an emotion, when you experience an emotion, your brain releases, I believe, neurotransmitters that have chemicals associated with them. And those chemicals are released into your system and you get addicted to them. And this is what's going on in social media now. You just got all these people like arguing back and forth. The left and the right, the anti-Trumpers and the Trumpers, they're all the same. They're just addicted to the chemicals that get excreted when they feel hatred. And I'm prone to get sucked right into it, which is why I've been staying away from these political posts. Because it's just a reason to get angry, right? And so I had anger and then we had sugar. I was addicted to sugar by the time I was like 3 or 4. I mean, seriously addicted. I'm still like, it's one of the last things I'm struggling with is getting off sugar. But my point is that the primary addiction is to emotions, right? And I rebelled against control. And there's other stuff going on here too. I don't want to give away too much about like my family, although it'll probably all be in the book because that's kind of the angle the book is taking is why do people get addicted? And people get addicted because of deep-rooted generational patterns that they inherit that are then perpetuated in the family of origin they find themselves born into. And so all of the people I know who are addicted are just products of dysfunction, right? Like I can see all of my friends who are addicted and trace back like exactly why. You know, based on what I know about their families and whatnot. And it's just like, oh, yeah. And it's the funny thing is, like, almost everybody is. It's almost everybody, you know. And it's really fascinating because I'm in, you know, the one program, the one anonymous program, the major one, but then there's a sub one. There's a sub anonymous program that's much more powerful. And I'm trying to cover it in the book that I'm writing without, you know, you want to keep these things, you want to protect these programs. You don't want to. They are anonymous. Even talking about it like this might be a little sketchy. So that's kind of where I am with this. It's sort of like I'm going to stop analyzing and I'm just going to continue on in telling the story from a slightly different angle, less chronological, because I was talking about Kundalini Yoga here a few minutes ago. What Kundalini Yoga does is, you know, I wake up in the morning. I've probably mentioned this in previous episodes, but I wake up. I got up at 3:53 today. I was wide awake. Right, got out of bed after a couple minutes of tossing and turning, maybe like 15 minutes, and got in this, you know, icy cold shower, and then I did an hour and 15 minutes of yoga. And what you're doing there is you are breaking up a pattern. You are breaking up business as usual. You are disrupting a flow, right, and replacing it with a different flow. And so in a lot of ways, all of this generational dysfunction has stopped with me in my sobriety. And I try not to be righteous about it, but it's really difficult when you look in your family of origin and you see all this dysfunction perpetuating itself, not stopping, you know? But you just got to be as humble. Like my goal now, it's almost like humility. And Kundalini Yoga keeps me very humble because the practice itself is very, very challenging. And it's something that it's like, I don't know. I'm a braggy type of a person. And that's all about my arrogance. And my arrogance is all about proving myself to someone or something. And the antidote for arrogance is really just humility, which is, you know, just kind of calmly navigating the world, not being better or worse than anyone else, but owning who you truly are. When you're humble, you're truly going to own who you are. Arrogance, you got something to prove, and arrogance is righteousness mixed with fear, right? And addicts are by nature very arrogant. So they think they're all high and mighty and smarter than everybody else, but underneath it, they're angry and sad, angry and fearful. Right? Angry and terrified. That was my thing in my 20s. I was just ridiculously arrogant. And, you know, to the point where I shared that last story with the two girls, you know, in the head and getting head and all that. Like, that was just arrogance. Like, because I did not have the capacity at that stage in my life to be intimate, truly intimate with anyone because I'd been hurt so bad. You know, there's probably another podcast I should make just called Girls. I'm just start weaving tales of women into the Telling Tales podcast. But what the Kundalini Yoga is doing is it's disrupting all of that. It's disrupting all of the patterns. And what it does is it reprograms your subconscious. And I'm a show me the money type of a person. Like I won't listen to anything until I won't believe anything until I've got proof. And just the fact that I sleep at night now without any sort of sleep aid at all after doing Kundalini Yoga is like all the proof I need. Right. So kind of a pitch for Kundalini Yoga. And then from here, I'm going to start reading excerpts from the book that I'm writing. So I think I can go on and just read a quick excerpt here. It's not polished. It's not finished, but you'll get the idea. So this is an excerpt of me and this guy, Chris. We were stranded. We dropped acid one time on a Friday afternoon on like a cloudy day in the fall of my senior year. And we just went, we went wandering around. And our plan was to go to this library, to the library at COD and, like, look at picture books or something and, like, hang out in the library. It's just some kooky, weird, acid fucking thing to do, you know. But we got stranded at this park called, what was it called? The Village Green. We got stuck at the Village Green on this piece of playground equipment, this, like, wood fort. And we started hallucinating and seeing wood grain everywhere. And so this is a story about the wood grain and what happened that day, because creating scene after scene in this book. So this chapter is called Wood Grain. So me and Chris, another one of our crew, dropped some acid on Friday one Friday afternoon as school was getting out, a good batch of blotter, a tiny white tab less than the size of a dime. I was upset that I only had one. We walked to the south side of town to a park called Village Green, over a mile, on past the parts of town we were used to, realizing quickly the strength of the dose and knowing that it would be hours until we returned back to Earth from our trip. Chris was big and strong and able to handle himself and was a jock before he found drugs. He made me feel safe and had long mulleted blonde hair and wore baggy jeans that were filthy and stained and had a god-awful sense of style, with fluorescent green shoelaces and a bright purple front-zipping hoodie with an airbrushed tie-dye underneath. He stumbled along like a football player who'd forgotten his cleats. He was lost and deranged by this point like I was. We climbed up a ladder onto a large square playground, fort-like structure made of brown lumber, and stared at the grain of the wood as the doses kicked in. Whoa. Yeah, whoa. Wow. Yeah. Wow. Wow, yeah. I think I'm starting to trip. Same. The wood grain moved up and down and swirled around and made movements that weren't real, then got mangled and twisted and moved even more. It melted and meshed and squinted our eyes. Words dripped themselves. It's like moving. Yeah, it's alive. Everything's alive. Whoa, cool. Like, everything's alive. It's breathing. We're breathing. We're, like, alive. Alive. How many of you people know you're alive? Morrison knows. He totally knows of the acid. We're like brothers. Everyone's brothers. Cool. Yeah. There were deep, heavy, overcast clouds moving into the field. I'd played soccer here as a kid on the traveling team with Max and Andrew. I took out some weed. There were kids playing football, older adolescents from Wheaton College, good kids who never took drugs and who prayed, who had guidance from powers beyond, Christians. We smoked a bowl and the wood grain got bigger and monstrous, rose up and surrounded us both, turned alive and then morphed up and danced our young minds. Places that kids shouldn't go. Fuck, dude. Whoa. Are you feeling what I'm feeling? Holy fuck. Yeah, yeah. The wood is moving. I'm seeing the same. We're the same. Everyone's the same. Whoa, yeah. The same. We're all the same. The same. Cool. All people are all the same. Yeah, cool. Cool. I'm fucked. So am I. We're all fucked. Everybody's fucked. Then the laughing took over and split up our faces to fractals. We got lost in the lawn, staring at the setting sun that moved through the grayness of the cloud-covered overhead landscape. The kids playing football had left. We'd been staring at things that weren't there for an hour or more, and then people had vanished from sight. Dude, they're gone. What the fuck? They, like, left. We didn't see. Dosed. Dosing, man. Fuck yeah, man. We're gone. They're gone. Gone. Bye-bye. Bye. Gone. Bye. Fuck, dude, they left. Dosing. Dosing. We're all the same. Lucy in the sky with diamonds. I knew what the song was about in that instant. Fuck, yeah. Lucy, her diamonds, for real. No shit. And we laughed and we laughed and we laughed as the words made their rhythms in space. Then we panicked and laughed even more like foolish lung droogs on a playground of innocence lost. Our faces fell off as we sputtered around on the fort. The wood grain encircled us both, being more there than anything not there could be. We stared into the field. My pipe sat behind me inside the wood, which was inside my brain and my breaths in the clouds. Wood-grained and visualized, playgrounded LSD madness, and two kids dosed out of their minds, wondering who they'd become. We got jumbled and panicked and sputtered around in the fortress, then sat back down after pacing around wildly. The wood grain enshrouded us more, making strange magic symbols and memes. We couldn't move or walk or talk like a dream that holds you in place before waking. We got stuck on the fort in the wood. It started to drizzle, then pour rain all over. The drops dripped down over our faces and lips and into our eye sockets, sopping us into its wetness. We stared and got lost in the shape-shifting landscape above. It kept raining down. The moon rose through like a dream we could catch. A land visited lifetimes ago, a tangible astrological anomaly brought down to Earth with the acid. It had mountains and rivers and drifty white snowflakes. Then kaleidoscopes took us away. It got sunny and starry and warm with colors that didn't have names. There were sounds being sung from the sky. The rain kept falling. Whoa. The words dripped out, soggy and leaking out colors, language slipping. Whoa, dude. Kaleidoscopes. On me. Everywhere. Inside. In me. All over the sky. Holy fuck. Lucy diamonds. They're living inside of my blood. In the bones. Then words were all done and we drifted to places unseen, to marmalade mountains on moons that had soft magic hues, and to the insides of secrets and colors and sounds, to lost lands that lived in antiquities. Stars started twinkling in patches that poked through the rain, which kept falling down. And then we were back, not knowing what happened or where we'd been. We hadn't moved for hours and were lonely, soaked, cold, and shivering and lost in our minds, spun around and wondering why we had done this adventure at all, questioning sanity. We got up and stumbled around on the fort, realizing things weren't good. It was rainy and wet, and we didn't have places to go. I looked at my hands, then moved it around in front of my face. It left a trail behind. What is it, Dave, and why are we here in this rain? We gotta go, I demanded pressuringly. We're soaked. His colors dripped. I saw blurry and purple and green. His mullet hung down past his shoulders and back. His hoodie was ragged and soaked. Soaked. Wet. Yeah. We collected ourselves and stumbled along through the park over towards Roosevelt Road, a flashback towards civilization. Denny's. For what? It's dry. A sopping desperation had ruined our fun for the night. 3 hours before, we had been in school, learning and growing. We'd become trapped, our palaces shattered and broken. The water dipped down from our chins. Our bones became cold, shaking themselves against the flesh that contained them. They have fries. I'm not hungry. Fuck it. Let's go anyway. A paranoid pleading had frigidly soaked itself through. We stumbled down past parking lots and neon signs and brightly lit car dealerships, then walked through the door into the diner, forgetting for a moment the places that we had just been, and to the place we'd been seemed to follow us into the restaurant. The moon, the rain, the wood grain, the things that weren't there that we saw. There was no escape from the ditch we had dug for ourselves. We walked into the bathroom and stared in the mirror. Our faces got melty and malleable. We laughed like senile and desperate sanitarium residents. A patron and normal citizen walked by behind us. stared at the way we were staring, rolled his eyes, and kept going. Oh, fuck, he saw us. Oh, well. Lucy is crazy like us, Morrison knows. Yes, he does. The restaurant was busy and bright, and a live Friday night, the heads of the patrons were floating on tops of their necks, exaggeratingly, like fictional cartoon caricatures. We tried to act normal and calm, but the restaurant was melting, and Woodgrain had followed us back from the park, then the bathroom. We were desperate and lost in things, seeing things others could not, wanting to explain to make it all better and good. Can I help you? The waitress stood there, pen and pad in hand. Fries, I sputtered. Yeah, fries, Chris echoed. We didn't want anything. We couldn't talk, sizzling our brains on the acid. The table had different patterns and grains of its own. What's wrong with the boys in the bathroom? A citizen might say. I'm going to go ahead and stop it there. That's just a chunk. That's a little slice. And I'm kind of piecing it together. There's early childhood stuff, and then this is obviously adolescence, and then it gets into like Colorado, and then the rest of it's basically written from there, Chicago, and then surfing. So thanks again for listening. This might be a little long, but I hope you enjoyed another edition of Addiction and Redemption. Talk to you next time.
Before the ayahuasca, before